I bid you welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday the 14th of November 2023. This week's local news items were selected by Di Shaw and Leslie Court and recorded at home by Judith Piggott and Leslie Court. The copying and distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful, and the technical officer, that's me, is David Field. Sunrise today is at 20 past 7 in the morning and sunset is at 4:15. On this day, in 1940, the Luftwaffe bombed Coventry, an 11-hour raid which they called Moonlight Sonata. And both Mozart and Beethoven's dads had their birthdays on this day.
A bus service created to help passengers cope with the closure of the Botley Road in Oxford is being cut back due to roadworks. In April, Network Rail closed the road at the rail bridge as part of a £161 million upgrade of Oxford Railway Station. The closure is now expected to remain until October next year. The Botley Flyer bus route starts at West Oxford Community Centre, then goes to Botley, then around to Woodstock Road, stopping in Summertown, Jericho and then the Westgate Centre. Previously, the Flyer was once an hour between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m, but this frequency has now been reduced because of National Highways work at the Botley interchange, which is due to continue until March. A Network Rail spokesman said, "Owing to National Highways work at Botley interchange, the timetable for the Botley Flyer has been revised. There will now be one journey into the city centre starting at 10 a.m. and one journey back at 12:45 p.m. This is a reduction from the previous service of one bus an hour between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. We are keeping the service under review to ascertain how this can be improved in the future and welcome any feedback." As well as National Highways work at the Botley interchange, gas company SGN is carrying out work on the A34 near the interchange on the southbound carriageway.
Hundreds gathered along with civic and faith leaders at a candlelit vigil in Oxford, calling for peace in the Middle East on Sunday evening. The moving tribute was an act of solidarity with those who suffer on all sides of the conflict in Gaza and Israel. Speakers representing Jewish, Muslim and Christian communities, the Bishop of Oxford, the Right Reverend Dr. Stephen Croft, Iman Monawar Hussein, founder of Oxford Foundation, and Louise Gordon, Vice President of the Oxford Jewish Congregation, reflected on the grief and suffering being endured by people on all sides of the war. Sarah, a woman who attended Sunday's vigil, who did not reveal her surname, said she came because TV coverage had left her in tears. "We need an end to this war, to all the wars going on, and to recognise our shared humanity," she said. Bishop Stephen welcomed around 300 attendees, saying, "It is vital in this moment of crisis for communities to come together across Oxfordshire in solidarity with those who are suffering and to reach out to one another. We must not let conflict in distant lands, however heartbreaking, divide us here." And he insisted that this was not an event for disharmony and division, and requested that there be no waving of flags, chanting or heckling. Iman Monawar Hussein said the latest hostilities in the Gaza Strip and Israel perpetuate the vicious cycle of violence, killing and revenge, and the solution is to follow a path of peace, reconciliation and healing. Leader of Oxford City Council Susan Brown said, "By working together, we ensure that hate and prejudice have no place in our city of Oxford." Her words were greeted by applause from the crowd. Both Oxford MPs, Annalise Dodds and Leila Moran, attended the vigil, as well as Oxford Council leaders from Oxfordshire County Council and Charwell, South Oxfordshire, Vale of Whitehorse and West Oxfordshire districts. Miss Moran, whose mother comes from Jerusalem, said she was distraught at the abhorrent atrocities committed by Hamas on October the 7th and felt deep grief also for those innocent Palestinians as the bombs started to fall on Gaza. She said, although her grief was deepening as the conflict continues, we are here to lean on one another and to find hope. My hope is that by being here, we are showing Oxfordshire and the country that you don't have to pick just one side. You can choose instead to stick to the side of humanity, she continued. Representatives of the Hindu, Sikh and Buddhist communities shared prayers for peace and understanding, and the crowd joined together in a one-minute Buddhist chant. Between speakers, Reverend Esther Lay led attendees in singing Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. Candles were lit before a moment of silence, and Bishop Stephen closed the event praying for peace in our nations, peace in our world.
A charity is holding a fun event to introduce people to the world of 3D printing in memory of a founder who died in his early 30s. The Sanjay Mortimer Foundation, that's SMF, was set up to support neurodivergent individuals into the world of engineering and making. It's holding a Rep Wrap Festival, a gathering of 3D printing fanatics from newly minted makers to manufacturers at Oxford's examination schools on December the 2nd and 3rd. The foundation is the legacy of Sanjay Mortimer, who was a co-founder of Oxfordshire 3D printing company, E3D, who died in late 2021 at the age of 32. The firm, based at Chalgrove Business Park, supplies some of the biggest names in aerospace, including Airbus, Boeing and US government space agency NASA. Mr. Mortimer met Operations Director David Lamb on a PGCE teaching course at Exeter University and studied at Newcastle University with Engineering Director Joshua Rowley. All three spent hours and hours messing about with 3D printers in their spare time. They moved to Oxfordshire in 2014. The fun event will offer live 3D printing demonstrations, including chocolate 3D printing, 3D robot races, giveaways and raffles, a live auction and talks from industry experts, including the founder of the RepRap movement, Adrian Bowyer. There will also be the opportunity to meet some of the industry's best-known content creators. The RepRap Festival is at Oxford Examination Schools on December 2nd and 3rd. Tickets for the event are at www.sanjaymortimerfoundation.org. There are 10 flood alerts in place across Oxfordshire following the aftermath of Storm Ciarán. The warnings cover stretches of the River Thames and rivers or streams in the Oxford area, including areas between Wolvercote, down to and including Radley and Jericho. The Environment Agency has also issued an alert for the River Charwell from Lower Hayford down to and including Oxford. And there could be further flooding across the county, with alerts in place for the River Evenlode from Moreton in Marsh to Cassington, as well as the River Glyme at Wootton and Woodstock. There are also alerts in place for the Abingdon and Henley areas near the River Thames. Alerts have been issued for areas near the River Ray as well, including Islip, in addition to the River Tame, Chalgrove Brook and Horsenden Stream. In these areas, residents are advised to monitor local water levels and weather conditions and to avoid using low-lying footpaths or entering areas prone to flooding. It comes after heavy rain and strong winds hit the region as Storm Ciarán swept through the county recently. The floods have provided fun for some, such as a canoe enthusiast seen kayaking in the flooded Oatlands Road recreation ground just off Osney Mead in Oxford on one afternoon. Opponents of Oxford's low-traffic neighbourhood traffic scheme were left frustrated after a bid to scrap the scheme was thwarted by councillors. Conservative Shadow Highways Chief Liam Walker proposed a motion to remove the LTNs in East Oxford and Cowley at an Oxfordshire County Council meeting on the 7th of November. But the motion was amended by Labour councillors so that it no longer called for the removal of the scheme and instead asked for the council to tackle congestion as a whole. Conservative group leader Eddie Reeves said that Labour were dupes. He said, "This debate has been utterly, utterly predictable. There are those amendments that seek to wreck and those that seek to add. This amended motion is now entirely without meaning. I literally don't know what it is asking the executive to do. Labour are all over the place on this. They are facing both ways." Mr. Walker had called for Labour councillors to come off the fence and back his motion to remove the scheme. Labour has traditionally supported the LTNs, but the party quit the ruling council coalition of Lib Dems and Greens in September. However, before Mr. Walker's motion could be voted on, Labour councillor Duncan Enright proposed an amendment to Mr. Walker's motion. It effectively asked the council to look at removing the congestion around the LTNs rather than getting rid of the actual scheme itself. This was voted through, with Labour, Lib Dem and Green councillors among those in favour and Tory councillors voting against. The amended motion, substantially changed from Mr. Walker's original version, was then passed. Speaking after the meeting, Mr. Walker said, "This amendment is a deliberate ploy by Labour to make the position on LTNs clear. This is Labour trying to shirk their responsibility of standing up for the working class in this city." Highways Chief and Lib Dem Andrew Gant, who spearheaded the East Oxford LTN scheme, said the amended motion supports what we are already doing. He said he looked forward to discussing with Labour councillors what additional measures should be introduced. But Labour leader Liz Brighouse told him that it was not business as usual and said the amended motion would look at reducing congestion in the city as a whole. She said that actually might mean taking out some of the LTNs. "We haven't actually looked at whether we need all the LTNs we have in the city, or whether taking some of them out might alleviate some of the problems we have." Labour councillor Duncan Enright added, "This is a change in emphasis. We want to see congestion tackled across the city."
Here are two items about Oxford markets. The covered market hits its 249th anniversary. The historic covered market in Oxford has celebrated its 249th anniversary with a super special occasion planned for next year. The city's beloved indoor market, which features more than 50 small independent stalls, turned 249 on Wednesday. Oxford's covered market originally arose from the need to bring the surrounding outdoor markets off the street. A spokesman for the market said, "The building of the market was one of the first times, if not the very first time, that Town and Gown worked together on a specific project. Thank you to everyone from traders past and present and to our wonderful customers who make a beeline to shop local and shop independent. Next year is, of course, our 250th anniversary, and we're busily working on plans to mark this super special occasion." Then Victorian Christmas. The Oxford Victorian Christmas Market returns this year on Thursday, November the 16th. The market in Broad Street will run until Sunday, the 19th of November, and feature Victorian attire, street food and entertainment, Christmas gifts, festive spirit and treats, a live DJ compere, and a Victorian stilt man. The market will be open from noon to 8 p.m. on Thursday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Santa Claus will also visit the market each day on Thursday and Friday from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday from 11:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. Event manager Lara Davis said, "We're thrilled to welcome everyone to experience the joy and nostalgia of the Victorian era. This event is a time machine back to a magical time, and we're excited to offer an unforgettable experience to all." Pedestrians are supposed to be at the top of the hierarchy in road use planning. But is this always the case in Oxford? In a new series, campaigner Sushila Dahl shines a light on some of the issues faced by walkers and wheelchair users. Oxford Pedestrians Association, OXPA, was founded in 1995 in response to a sense of marginalisation due to constant encroaches on pavement and footway space in Oxford by parked cars, cycles, bins, overhanging hedges, workers' signs, and a general awareness that pavement users can be marginalised to the nth degree and nobody will say or do anything. We work on behalf of all pedestrians, including wheelchair users and people with other mobility support needs. And our call is for pavements that are wide, two wheelchair users should be able to pass with comfort and dignity, and people should be able to walk side by side, level, continuous and unobstructed, and crossings that are responsive, level, and give enough time to cross. We also campaign for peaceful streets with clean air. Since OXPA started, the experience of our members has been that conditions have overall worsened in many ways. With the exception of Frideswide Square, a bold and beautiful step in the right direction. With cycle lanes and car parking placed on pavements by the use of painted white lines, increased motorised traffic, due in part to Westgate Centre pulling drivers into the city centre, scooter parks on pavements, huge unaddressed puddles, ponding, at pedestrian crossings after rain, workers' signs all over the pavements, poles and bus shelters narrowing already narrow routes, and following COVID, street cafes on pavements, which we welcome, but ask that the space in the road be reallocated to pedestrians to make up for the lost pavement space. In response to these issues, OXPA has taken action over the years, such as carrying out audits of pavements throughout the city, none of which are universally fit for purpose. A pavement is only as good as its narrowest and most unobstructed part, which have demonstrated why so many walkers and wheelchair users cannot get around on pavements as they would like to. This was clearly shown in our survey of members on the recent proposal to regularise cycling on Cornmarket and Queen Street during working hours. Overall, OXPA members are against this, where a significant number of responders saying that they never come into the city centre as it is inaccessible to them. Our audits have shown also that the two worst walking areas of Oxford are the routes between the rail station and the city centre and Headington shopping area. These audits really do shine a light on the most common issues pedestrians face, and more information from them will be shared in future columns.
Oxford actress Florence Pugh joins Robert Pattinson and Christian Bale as part of the English voice cast of fantasy animation The Boy and the Heron. The latest movie is from Oscar winner Hayao Miyazaki, who has gained international acclaim as a creator of Japanese animated feature films. The Boy and the Heron is Mr. Miyazaki's first feature film in more than 10 years and premiered at the 48th Toronto International Film Festival in September. The film is billed as a semi-autobiographical fantasy about life, death and creation in tribute to friendship from the mind of Hayao Miyazaki. It will arrive in cinemas on December the 26th.
The 18th century orangery restaurant at Blenheim Palace has reopened after a £2 million restoration. The glass ceiling has been replaced with timber and slate as part of the project to return it to its original design. The orangery serves afternoon teas and Sunday roasts and is available to hire for corporate meetings and even weddings. The inside has also undergone a complete makeover, featuring stunning chandeliers and a decor mixing contemporary chic with timeless charm. The restoration team worked closely with Historic England to ensure the work materials and the architecture remained sympathetic to Vanbrugh's original design. It is believed to be the first type of restoration program carried out on a Grade 1 listed building of its kind. The orangery has had various uses over the centuries, including as a greenhouse where oranges and lemons were grown over the winter months, a theatre, offices and an art gallery, and now a restaurant. The orangery roof was last repaired in the 1970s, but the 19th century glass roof came to the end of its natural life and needed entirely replacing. Thanks to information sourced from the Blenheim Palace archives, it is believed that the orangery has now returned to its original design before a fire broke out in 1861.
Disease in a woodland which has been owned and maintained by the University of Oxford since the 1940s has been investigated by BBC Countryfile. The visit focused on the threat of ash dieback at the university-owned Whiteham Woods. The BBC team met with scientists from Oxford's Environmental Change Institute to learn about the site of special scientific interest. Professor Yadvinder Mali, Ecosystems Research Programme Leader at the Institute, and Tom Atkins, researcher at the University's Leverhulme Centre for Nature Recovery, shared what they have learned during a four-year study at Whiteham with BBC presenters Hamza Yassin and Ellie Harrison. The BBC team went up Whiteham's Flux Tower, a scaffolding structure which allows researchers to measure the flows of carbon dioxide and water across the woods. Professor Marley said, "Ash dieback is a silent pandemic affecting nature in Western Europe. Whiteham is an ideal place to study ash dieback, both in how it is affecting the ash trees and also the wider ecosystem. And that is because the woods have such a long history of studies of the mammals, the birds, the other trees and the soil. What we are doing at Whiteham is to try to bring together all those range of studies to understand that when you take out the ash trees, how does that cascade through an entire ecosystem? Ash dieback is a fungus which originated in Asia. Its introduction to Europe about 30 years ago has devastated the European ash because the native ash species did not evolve with the fungus, and this means it has no natural defence against it. Whiteham Woods is a large carbon sink because it is still recovering from intense land management prior to and during the Second World War, and it's now benefiting from a focus on conservation since the 1960s. Ash dieback may turn the woods from a carbon sink into a carbon source in the next few years. This will be closely tracked by researchers working on the new ash dieback project funded by the Natural Environment Research Council. Whiteham Woods has been owned and maintained by the University of Oxford since 1942. The woods are often quoted as being one of the most researched pieces of woodland in the world, and its 1,000 acres are designated as a site of special scientific interest. The site is rich in flora and fauna, with over 500 species of plants, a wealth of woodland habitats, and 800 species of butterflies and moths. BBC Countryfile has been running as a show since the late 1980s, focusing on issues affecting British wildlife.
Four men have been charged in connection with the theft of a solid gold toilet from Blenheim Palace. James Sheen, aged 39, of Wellingborough, has been charged with one count of burglary, one count of conspiracy to transfer criminal property, and one count of transferring criminal property. Michael Jones, aged 38, of Oxford, has been charged with one count of burglary. Fred Doe, aged 35, of Ascot, and Bora Gakuk, aged 39, of West London, have both been charged with one count each of conspiracy to transfer criminal property. The men will all appear in Oxford Magistrates Court on 28th of November 2023. The 18-carat gold artwork, valued at $6 million or £4.8 million, was stolen in a raid at the stately home in Woodstock on September the 14th, 2019. The toilet, entitled America, was part of an exhibition by Italian artist Maurizio Cattelan and had only been on display in Blenheim Palace for 2 days when it was stolen. Only the flushing mechanism and loo roll were left behind by the thieves, and the toilet has never been found. As it was fully functioning and plumbed in, the theft caused flood damage to the palace. Entitled America, it was previously displayed at the Guggenheim Museum in New York, where in 2016, 100,000 people queued to use it, leading to a 3-minute time limit being imposed.
Young engineers had constructive fun building paper towers when Oxford High School welcomed 84 primary school pupils to a science session. The children from St Francis, New Marston, Cutslow and St Nicholas primary schools joined the high school's own Year 8 students for the JEMS, Juniors in Engineering, Maths and Science, morning recently. Teacher Maria Whittington said, "Science is for everyone of all ages. We love science here at Oxford High School, and it's been wonderful to see so many pupils learning new things together. Everyone worked incredibly hard, engineering stable paper towers and discussing what their schools do to help protect the environment."
The Westgate Centre in Oxford is launching its Christmas theme with a view to helping customers save the planet. A new alternative Christmas experience designed and curated by Wayne Hemming will be launching at the shopping centre later this month. This year, the centre will be home to Wasteless Wonderland, a rain interpretation of the classic Christmas market with a sustainable theme. Wasteless Wonderland will showcase talent from the city and beyond as part of a Christmas market experience. It will offer good-for-the-planet gifts from independent designer makers, festive food produce and street food from local suppliers, as well as workshops that reuse and repurpose leftovers from Christmases past. Launching on Friday, November the 24th and running until December the 22nd, shoppers will be able to experience a festive lineup of attractions, events and experiences. This includes Christmas star making workshops using only wood offcuts, kaleidoscope and gift making using recycled Christmas cards and Japanese zero waste gift wrapping, courtesy of the Furoshiki Wrap Company. Customers will have chance to craft homemade decorations such as wreaths using natural resources, seasonal foliage and adornments that can be found in your garden. There are expected to be more than 30 activities, attractions and traders, including designer makers selling slow fashion and reworked vintage across the month-long experience. There will be something for all the family, including weekend workshops, interactive elements and entertainment. There will even be a toy swap gift exchange. 3 food brands from Oxfordshire will be part of the experience. For the musically minded, there will be an opportunity to play your favourite Christmas tunes with the Junk Orchestra's Giant Music Mushrooms. The orchestra is a supersonic collection of reinvented objects, recycled into musical instruments. Wasteless Wonderland will be adorned with a striking design that reimagines casts off from Christmas's past, breathing new life into leftover materials. Each Friday we'll see Wasteless Wonderland host Friday Lates from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. A pop-up bar from Toast will be exclusive to Friday Lates, with the company's craft beer brewed with surplus fresh bread that would otherwise go to waste. Toast profits go to charities working to fix waste food system. Friday Lates will also include the Recycle DJ Party, with Charity Shop DJ, who use vinyl records sourced solely from charity shops to trigger memories. Guests can pick a record, get behind the turntables, and have a go at being a DJ themselves dedicating their tracks to friends at the event.
There were more treasure finds reported in Oxfordshire last year, new figures show. It comes as the number of detectorists across the UK continues to grow, with the Institute of Detectorists raising concerns about the supply of historical artefacts possibly running out. Data collected by the Department of Portable Antiquities and Treasure at the British Museum show 49 treasure finds in Oxfordshire were recorded in 2022, up from 44 the year before. The figures show the number of reported treasure finds for 2021 and provisional figures for 2022 within England, Wales and Northern Ireland. Detectorists use metal detectors to scour open land for buried items, occasionally unearthing historic coins, pottery or other historic items. The amount of buried treasure discovered across the nations reached a new high last year, with some 1,378 finds in 2022, marking the ninth consecutive year that the 1,000 mark has been exceeded. The southeast of England held on to its title as the country's buried treasure hotspot, with 349 finds last year, accounting for 25% of all treasure finds. Keith Westcott, founder of the Institute of Directorists, said, "The number of active detectorists has been steeply rising since the COVID lockdown." He added the 2021 Portable Antiquities Annual Report suggested there might be as many as 40,000 active metal detectorists in the United Kingdom. Current estimates for 2023 raise this figure to 50,000, he said. He added the amazing and precious resource of portable heritage is being depleted as more people take up metal detecting. He noted just 3,000 metal detectorists are recording with the Portable Antiquities Scheme, which is managed by the British Museum and records archaeological finds discovered by the public. Overall, around a quarter of the found objects and a quarter of the found coins were acquired by or donated to museums, totaling 270 editions. The finalised figures for 2021 show there were 1,072 finds recorded. Of these, 96% of treasure finds were discovered by metal detecting, 3% were archaeological finds, and 1% were chance finds or were found via mudlarking. Separately, a Department for Culture, Media and Sport survey in 2022-3 found an estimated 1% of adults in England said they had taken part in metal detecting at least once in the 12 months prior to the survey. Media law publisher McNays defines treasure as a found object which is not a single coin, which contains at least 10% of gold or silver, and which is at least 300 years old, and any other object found with it.
A community centre that provides support and advice to children and families who need extra help is set for a £900,000 upgrade. Oxford's Cuddeston Corner Family Centre in Cuddeston Way in Blackburn, Leeds, will be extended and reconfigured to house both the County Council's Family Solutions Service and the Oxfordshire Hospital School. The building has been vacant since the pandemic when the Family Solutions team moved to alternative accommodation. Oxfordshire Hospital School, which serves children and young people who are unable to attend their home school due to medical and mental health needs, has been using a temporary base provided by St Nicholas Primary School in Marston, Oxford. The school had to move from its previous accommodation to provide the Department for Education with vacant possession to build the Swan School and rebuild Meadowbrook College. Family Solutions will use the space to provide key support for local families, including a play and learn space and supervised contact rooms. The Oxfordshire Hospital School will base their business support team on site, as well as using the facility to offer virtual teaching to children as part of its outreach work. Construction will be led by contractor ODS, starting in November, with completion aimed for summer 2024. Councillor John Howson, Oxfordshire's County Council's Cabinet Member for Children, Education and Young People's Services, said, "Cuddeston Corner Family Centre will become an even more prominent focal point for families of children receiving support from Oxfordshire County Council, as well as an important hub for the Oxfordshire Hospital School."
Oxford actor Hugh Laurie is in a new Netflix drama about the Second World War. All the Light We Cannot See is a four-part drama based on the novel of the same name by Anthony Durr. The novel revolves around the characters Marie-Laure LeBlanc, a blind French girl who takes refuge in her uncle's house in Saint-Malo after France is invaded by Nazi Germany, and Werner Pfennig, a bright German boy who is accepted into a military school because of his skills in radio technology. Sean Levy has directed the drama for Netflix, with Mr. Laurie playing Marie-Laure's uncle Etienne. Mr. Levy said, "My central message to fans of the book, and I'm screaming this from the top of the mountain here, is I'm as big a fan as you. My goal was to do justice to this gorgeous novel that touched me deeply." Mr. Durr said, "To watch finished, polished scenes is mind-blowing. To see an auteur's vivid dream of something I built with sentences and paragraphs is an astonishing gift. The series is absolutely gorgeous to look at, from the opening, with all the leaflets falling from the sky, to the montage of Marie-Laure's father building her a scale model of Saint-Malo. It repeatedly took my breath away." Mr. Laurie was brought up in the city, as his father, Dr. Ran Laurie, was a GP in Blackbird Leys. He was born in Oxford in 1959 and was educated at Dragon School in North Oxford between the ages of 7 and 13, before going to Eton College and then Cambridge University. It was there, as the president of the university's renowned Footlights Amateur Dramatics Club, that he met Stephen Fry, and shortly after, a professional partnership was born. Mr. Fry and Mr. Laurie's stage success led to their TV sketch show Alfresco, which also featured the likes of their friend and Laurie's one-time partner Emma Thompson, Ben Elton and Robbie Coltrane. His comedy prowess was further bolstered by his role in Blackadder as the amiable idiot George in the third and fourth series of the hit sitcom in the late 1980s. On the big screen, Mr. Laurie has appeared in films such as Peter's Friends, Maybe Baby, Sense and Sensibility, 101 Dalmatians, The Man in the Iron Mask, The Borrowers, and Stuart Little. In 2004, his reputation grew even more when he landed the leading role in US medical series House. His portrayal of the unconventional and antisocial Dr. Gregory House won him a host of top industry prizes, including Golden Globes, Screen Actors Guild Awards, and People's Choice Awards, as well as a handful of Emmy nominations. Mr. Laurie was made a Commander of the Order of the British Empire for services to drama in 2017.
The overrunning of the gasworks on the A34 near Oxford has been slammed as flabbergasting failure of organisation, as motorists were hit with major delays at the start of the week. The work of SGN on the A34 shut the southbound carriageway over the weekend between the Pear Tree Interchange and the Hinksey Hill Interchange. One lane had been due to reopen at 5 a.m, with the second shut for the rest of the week for continued gas works. However, the road remained closed throughout Monday before one lane was reopened just before 5 p.m. on the 6th of November. SGN apologised for the delays, saying it was caused after a gas pipe was located closer to lane 2 than initially anticipated. The gas company said that it would not have been safe to reopen the lane without further remedial work. A spokesman for Oxfordshire County Council explained the authority had been notified in advance of the SGN works on the A34, which is managed by National Highways. He added that the council does not have the power to prevent such work happening, and the authority was made aware of the works overrunning early on Monday morning. Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran said, "Road users across Oxfordshire faced yet more unacceptable disruption as SGN's works overran. Yet again, road users have been subjected to a flabbergasting failure of organisation. I absolutely share the anger and frustration that yet again it appears lessons have not been learnt following the chaos of the Wolvercote Bridge repair and A34 closures. When agencies fail to stick to their own timetables, it is local people who suffer. My team have been in contact with SGN about the disruption and called for appropriate mitigations to be put in place. The levels of disruption we have seen are unacceptable, and residents in and around Oxford deserve better." Oxford's Highways Chief, Councillor Andrew Gant, said, "It is very frustrating that SGN has missed the agreed reopening time of 5 a.m. for the A34 southbound. This means that the Monday morning rush hour was heavily impacted. Although the A34 is not the County Council's road, we do manage the rest of the network around Oxford other than the M40. The failure to stick to a plan that would have seen the road cleared in time for the busy commute will have knock-on effects for everyone. It is something we will be strongly taking up with both SGN and National Highways on behalf of the travelling public." Motorists reported being stuck in traffic for hours after the road closure was unexpectedly still in place.
Members of the public have criticised the organisers of Oxford's biggest fireworks display for leaving parts of South Park churned up after the event. It was the 55th annual charity fireworks display, and organisers Oxford Round Table said the event was a great success. More than 20,000 people poured into the park below Headington Hill to see the display featuring a large bonfire, and the night is expected to raise more than £50,000 for local charities. But vehicles needed to set up the display are said to have churned up the turf in wet conditions, and people who live near the park have complained to the City Council, which owns the park. Christian Peterson of Oxford Round Table said, "More than 20,000 people attended, and we are hoping to raise £50,000 for local charities. There is temporary damage to the park, but there won't be lasting damage because the areas affected will be rolled by council staff and they could have recovered by Christmas." Mr. Peterson added, "This happens every year. We plan for the council to undertake rectification works. We have a vested interest in the long-term future of the park." Mr. Peterson said some running boards were used and the way the event was run would be reviewed. Dr. Daniel Emlyn-Jones from Oxford, who lives nearby, said, "Each year Oxford Round Table organises Oxford fireworks display in South Park, and each year the park ends up looking like the Battle of the Somme had just taken place. Residents have pleaded repeatedly with the organisers to protect the ground with sheeting, and each year Oxford Round Table have refused on the grounds of cost." Another resident, Ned Denny, added, "I just wanted to add my voice to what is hopefully a chorus of voices protesting at the absolutely scandalous state of South Park. I thought last year was bad, but this really has to be seen to be believed, almost resembling a battlefield with numerous areas so torn up and deeply rutted as to be wholly impassable. The park is one of Oxford's finest and most picturesque assets, and it's completely unacceptable that the cost of an hour or two's entertainment is wrecking its beauty and walkability for what will now be the entire winter at least." Park user Sue Harmer added, "Unbelievably, the day after the fireworks, the lorries continued to churn up the park and take surplus pallets to be burned on the remnants of the bonfire. A bonfire of the vanities, as continuing to plough the park and add to the air pollution seems to be the preferred option." Over the years, more than £1 million has been donated to local good causes from the proceeds of the display. Oxford City Council said, "Following concerns raised, discussions are taking place with key stakeholders to investigate what steps can be taken to reduce the impact on the park in future years. Ground rectification works will take place as soon as possible, but this can only be done once the ground has dried out. Attempting to do this while it's still saturated is just likely to make the situation worse. The cost of the work will be covered by the Round Table, with no costs accruing to the council.
A pleasant, if unassuming, street tucked away in the suburbs of North Oxford, Middleway may appear to be an unremarkable thoroughfare. Old cottages jostle with tidy terraced houses, neat new houses, blocky flats and offices, on a leafy summer town road hidden between Banbury and Woodstock roads. But look closer and the oddities jump out. A pocket handkerchief-sized chapel, Art Deco gems, traces of a slaughterhouse, and reminders of a long-gone rustic past. There is clearly more to the place than meets the eye, and that colourful past is what has inspired Middleway resident Gareth Winrow to take a deep dive into his neighbourhood to see what he could find. The result is his book, The Butcher, the Tailor, the Picture Frame Maker, Stories of Middleway, which has just been published, and he says it is more than just a land and a house history. Tracing the lives of fascinating characters connected with the area in which he lives, Gareth reveals enlightening and little-known tales of the history of Oxford, and Summertown in particular. It is filled, said Gareth, with stories of intriguing individuals. There is the little-known tale of Elizabeth Wisdom, he begins, a newlywed woman from a God-fearing family in 1749. She was sentenced to death for supposedly murdering her young housemaid in Chipping Norton in a fit of jealousy with the poisoned pudding. Her trial attracted great attention at the time and divided public opinion. About to be hanged in Oxford Castle, Elizabeth's life was spared when King George II pardoned her after the intervention of his then favourite mistress, the Countess of Yarmouth. However, because of her conviction for murder, Elizabeth could not inherit her share of the property on what is now Middleway. The book is extensively referenced, uses archival sources, and is well illustrated. Through interviews, a voice is also given to the relatives of those connected with the land and the property on Middleway. By following the lives of our intriguing individuals associated with a particular piece of land, the author also explores the origins of Summertown in the 1820s and notes how what was primarily an artisan's village, dotted with occasional villas and also pockets of extreme poverty, evolved to become the well-heeled suburb of today. It is a shining reminder of how even the most ordinary residential street is heavy with history and is thick with human stories covering every aspect of existence, from fame to infamy, triumph to tragedy, and success to scandal. The Butcher, the Tailor, the Picture Frame Maker, Stories of Middleway, brackets the Book Guild, is now out. Gareth will be giving a presentation on his book at an event organised by the Oxford Civic Society at Rewley House, Wellington Square, Oxford, at 6 p.m. on the 16th of November. Free tickets are available from Eventbrite.
A new Indian restaurant has opened in the centre of Oxford. Old Delhi on Park End Street has welcomed its first customers serving up Indian dishes. The team behind Old Delhi includes Kapil Kahadka, the manager, who has 15 years of experience from his previous role at the 4,500 miles from Delhi curry restaurant. This occupied a large space in Park End Street and was trading until December the 31st, according to its managers. The name Old Delhi was suggested by Dr. Padmesh Gupta, Managing Director of Oxford Business College, during a conversation with the restaurant owner. Dr. Gupta said, "The most authentic and flavourful Indian cuisine originates from Old Delhi, the birthplace of beloved dishes such as dal makhani and butter chicken." Chefs at the Old Delhi include Baha Janil Manda, who has experience at the Taj Group of Hotels, and Bhakti Bhandari. A restaurant spokesman said, "With a commitment to preserving the culinary heritage of Old Delhi, the restaurant promises a memorable dining experience for all who seek authentic Indian flavours in the heart of Oxford. It is set to become a go-to destination for Indian food enthusiasts in the city." The opening night was attended by Oxford author Paul Gustafson and Arun Maheshwari, a publisher from Vani Publications in Old Delhi, India. A wave of major housing applications for the northern fringes of Oxford have renewed fears that villages will be swallowed up by the city. In the last month, almost 500 new homes have been approved in Kidlington, and plans for 540 homes near Yarnton have gone to a government appeal. These applications are the first in a long line, as Charwell District Council plans for 4,400 homes to be built in the area by 2031. But the rampant development has been opposed by councillors and villagers who fear losing the Kidlington gap that separates them from Oxford. Councillor Ian Middleton said, "If you study this area on a map, you will see that these villages are going to be swallowed up and become unrecognisable in 20 years. You can say that's progress, but for people who've moved here to live in a rural area, they are disconcerted." Mr. Middleton, who represents Kidlington South on Oxfordshire County Council, also raised concerns about the amount of planned university housing and facilities in the area. The 540-home plan near Yarnton was submitted by Merton College, a constituent college of Oxford University, while 800 new homes are planned for Water Eaton and farmland north of Cutslow Park by another college, Christchurch, and Bellway. Mr. Middleton said, "We're going to end up with places like Yarnton and Begbroke becoming like new campuses for the university built around their facility. We were not happy about what was going on in the area anyway, but areas like this are pretty much going to be turned into university campuses by stealth. Part of the reason I got involved in local politics is because I felt so aggrieved about what they're planning to do here. It's a 5,000-year-old rural community that's going to be turned into a university area. It feels like a bit of an imposition." In 2020, there was uproar when Charwell District Council agreed to meet Oxford housing needs by allocating 4,400 new homes on land surrounding Kidlington, Yarnton and Begbroke in its local plan. The then councillor Catherine Tyson said at the time it was akin to spitting in the face of local residents, while Helen Marshall, director of the Oxfordshire branch of the Campaign to Protect Rural England, said it would be like two new Didcots. Now villages are seeing the first wave of this new housing. As well as the plans in Kidlington, Yarnton and Water Eaton, an application is expected soon for more than 1,000 homes at North Oxford Golf Club. The Banbury Road course is designated for 1,200 homes by the council, and members have voted to accept an offer to leave the course by October 2025. Fears have also been stoked by Oxford United's plans to build a new stadium in an area of land known as the Triangle, south of Kidlington Roundabout. The County Council agreed to lease the land to the club in September. Suzanne McIver, Secretary of the Harbord Road Residents Association in Cutslow, said, "The Kidlington Gap is unfortunately lost. Residents in the area have many concerns around the development of the Kidlington Gap, including traffic and congestion, which is already severe at times. It is also sensitive to accidents on the strategic road network, such as the A34. This may be made worse by the proposal for a football stadium in the area, with planned road closures for match days. Other local issues are air pollution, the lack of wastewater and sewage treatment capacity, water scarcity in periods of dry weather, and the impact on already busy GPs, pharmacies and hospitals. But rural communities are starting to push back against the new housing plans. Significant opposition was mounted to Merton's 540-home Yarnton plan when it was decided by the council's planning committee recently. A flood defence group claimed it would worsen flooding in Yarnton, which sits on low-lying land near the Thames floodplains and is already plagued by frequent floods. An agent on behalf of Merton refuted the claim, but the district council still voted against the development due to technical issues with the application. The contentious plans will now go to a government inquiry, but Charwell's planning officers said they were confident the issues can be overcome. District councils and MPs have also resisted plans by Oxford City Council to expand housing into neighbouring districts, including Charwell. Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran, who represents Yarnton and Kidlington as part of her constituency, said neighbouring districts are already obliged to build thousands of homes that the City Council claims it doesn't have room for. The City Council has admitted that it was a big ask.
The Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner has awarded 13 street pastors across the Thames Valley area over £40,000 of additional funding. Matthew Barber, PCC for the Thames Valley, has announced £46,000 of funding for 13 street pastors organisations across the region. The funding, which has been awarded through the PCC's Community Fund, will be split across 13 street pastors based in Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Milton Keynes and Oxfordshire. Mr. Barber said, "The support that the street pastors across the Thames Valley provide to the police is invaluable. Over the last year, I have been out on patrol with a number of street pastors and have seen firsthand how they successfully work in collaboration with Thames Valley Police and local businesses to help create a positive atmosphere for those having a night out, offering support to individuals by providing practical assistance to keep people safe. I am therefore delighted to be able to provide £46,000 of core funding to help support the vital role each of these organisations play in keeping our communities safe across Thames Valley. Street pastor volunteer groups provide demand reduction support to Thames Valley Police and prevent escalation of violence while improving the safety of vulnerable people by assisting them to safety. The groups vary in how they operate and their size, so the decision is to distribute £46,000 of funding across three tiers of group based on the town stroke city they are located in. The Community Fund supports voluntary and community groups that help to prevent crime and keep communities safe. Money for the scheme comes from the sale of items seized from criminals that cannot be returned to their rightful owners."
Liam Manning has left Oxford United for Sky Bet Championship side Bristol City. The Ashton Gate outfit's pursuit of Manning was believed to have intensified since the 6th of November, with the Robins keen to announce a replacement for Nigel Pearson before their trip to Queen's Park Rangers on the Saturday. Assistant head coach Chris Hogg is also leaving the U's. Craig Short will take on the role of interim head coach, supported by former player and current academy coach Chris Hackett. United chairman Grant Ferguson told the club website, "We reluctantly gave Bristol City permission to speak with Liam after he indicated he wanted to discuss their vacant managerial position with them. The club did everything it could to keep him here, but we move on and the project continues. Our focus now is to quickly appoint Liam's successor and support Craig as interim head coach." U's chief executive officer Tim Williams added, "I'm hugely disappointed to be losing Liam and Chris at this stage of the season, particularly given the support they have had. However, we've already begun the process of securing the best possible candidate to replace Liam. This is a fantastic club with great training facilities and an exciting future. I have no doubt we will have huge interest in the role." Manning took over as United boss in March, guiding the club to safety in League One last season. This campaign has seen the U's flourish under Manning as they sit second in the third tier and 3 points behind leaders Portsmouth. The former MK Dons boss described becoming the new Robins head coach as a terrific opportunity. He has signed a 3.5-year contract and met his new squad for the first time. The Robins sit 11th and 4 points shy of the playoff places in the second tier. This is a terrific opportunity and one that I'm really looking forward to, Manning told the Robins website. If you look at the vision of the club and where they want to get to and how they want to get there, I think there's really good fit and alignment with my journey and where I want to get to. You want players that you can coach and are mouldable and on an upward trajectory in their career. I think that brings certain behaviours in terms of drive, intensity and ambition, which align with how we want to work. Robins chairman John Lansdowne added, Liam is a great fit for the club and the style of play we want. He has a very detailed approach to coaching, improving players and getting the best out of them, as his record at MK Dons and Oxford United shows, while he has valuable experience within the City Group and in Belgium. As soon as we made the change, Liam was our first choice, and we're grateful to Oxford United for the extremely professional way they have approached the departure of someone who was doing a fantastic job for them. We're excited about the arrival of Liam and Chris and fulfilling the ambition we all have for the club with this talented and committed group of players. An Oxford secondary school has been rated good by Ofsted following an inspection in September. In their report, inspectors commended the Cheyne School in Headington for the high standard of education on offer. They described the culture as vibrant and inclusive, while the curriculum is described as broad and ambitious across all key stages. Inspectors describe lesson routines as ensuring that classrooms are calm and positive and help pupils to develop positive learning habits as well as independence. The report said, at the heart of this are the positive and respectful relationships between pupils and staff and high standards of behaviour in lessons and around the site. Parents and carers are very positive about the school. They particularly like its caring and supportive ethos, but also that staff aim high for their pupils. This is the first inspection of the school since the COVID-19 pandemic and since Mr. Pavey has been head teacher, joining the school in September 2020. He said, it is the feedback from the inspectors that it seems to be a school where people genuinely like each other, which I like the most, as it is what everything else flows from. The report also made clear that all pupils, including those with special educational needs and disabilities, are supported in their learning.
From Memory Lane, remembering North Hinksey Primary School. The history of education at North Hinksey can be traced back to 1857, when a school was built on glebe land next to the church. An appeal for the building fund spoke of a poor and forlorn little village within a mile of Oxford, which cries aloud to the university and to the city for help. The school appears to have hit hard times in 1891, with the vicar, the Reverend Harrison, described as unbusinesslike in management. With three different teachers in charge that year, the school was found by inspectors to be unsatisfactory. However, it appears to have improved as it was extended in 1894 to take 100 pupils. The history of the school features in the Changing Faces of Botley and North Hinksey, two booklets in the series about Oxford and its suburbs by John Hanson and Martin Harris. One pupil, George King, remembered his days there during the First World War. I loved our little school, every lesson, every minute. William Woodward never forgot his first day at school. According to legend, if you spat on a roadside stone in Hinksey Lane, it brought you good luck. William recalled, I did just that, and stepping over the stile a little further on, I found a sixpenny piece. Can you imagine my elation? I've never seen such money. Another pupil, Alice Harvey, enjoyed most lessons but not knitting and sewing. I always had to knit socks and I hated it, especially when we came to the heel, which was the hardest part to do. The school featured prominently in the community in 1976 when it held a Tudor evening as part of an 8-day Botley festival. Pupils reenacted Kenilworth, Walter Scott's novel, featuring the death of Amy Robsart at Cumnor. The school hall became Kenilworth Castle. Continuing the Tudor theme, the head chef of Woolsthorne College, Tony Willis, provided Elizabethan-style food. Pupils taking part in the event included Sarah Coppock and Julie Swadling.
The Iffley Road running track is famous around the world for Sir Roger Bannister's record-breaking 4-minute mile in 1954, but now high-tech robots have taken to the starting blocks as part of an annual science festival. The IF Oxford Science and Ideas Festival is an independent charity which runs a programme of talks and activities that aim to promote public interest in all things scientific across the city. The month-long programme culminated at the 400-metre circuit at Oxford University, which was the venue for the groundbreaking athletic feat as the neurologist became the first person ever to run a mile in under 4 minutes. High-tech robots took to the tracks on Sunday, October 29th, as children controlled mini-robots to race against each other as bigger machines tackled an obstacle course on the track.
The MG Car Club of Abingdon welcomed a businessman from India and his family who drove a classic MG 7,500 miles back to its birthplace. Ahmedabad-based Daman Thakur and his 75-year-old father, 21-year-old daughter and friends, driving a backup vehicle, hit the road in their 1950 MG Y-Type Tourer for the 2-month journey, which began on August the 15th. The Y-Type was restored over a 2-year period before the trip, together with 6 years of meticulous planning for the journey. Parts were acquired from around the world, with Mr. Thakur also travelling to the UK to acquire items. To ensure the car would withstand all conditions, they tested it in harsh temperatures in excess of 45 degrees Celsius and even drove the vehicle in 3 feet of water. He said, "The car has spent all its life in India, my dad buying it 48 years ago when I was 2. So this is a very special journey to bring it back to the UK. Our adventure with Lal Pari, or Red Angel, as we lovingly call her, has been inspired by bedtime stories my mum read to me as a youngster, and I'm so proud to now be able to complete these journeys. Lal Pari spreads happiness and joy wherever it goes, and we wish to share that with the rest of the world." The car was supported by a camper van which contained spare parts as well as filming equipment and Lal Pari's support group. The journey, which started on the 15th of August, India's 77th Independence Day, took over 2 months to complete and crossed 16 countries, which included Iran, Azerbaijan, Turkey, Switzerland, Germany and France, before reaching its final destination of Abingdon on the 31st of October. A sterling silver hood monogram of Sardar Patel Statue of Unity has been specially commissioned to adorn the hood of Lal Pari and will be gifted to the people of the UK from the people of India on conclusion of the journey, and with the hope that it can be presented to King Charles III, said Mr. Thakur. On their arrival at the MG Car Club's Kimber House in Abingdon, they were welcomed by the staff and members who had put on display of cars, including 2 Y-type saloons. John Day, the club president, welcomed Mr. Thakur and his family on behalf of the club. In attendance was the Deputy Lieutenant of Oxford, Mrs. Felicity Dick, who was presented with the Statue of Unity by Mr. Thakur. Mrs. Dick replied that she would endeavour to personally present the Sardar Patel Statue of Unity to King Charles III.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.